This podcast is brought to you by Monetary Gold. Listeners who open a qualified account will receive up to $5,000 in free gold or silver. To learn more, go to monetarygold.com/grace. That's monetarygold.com/grace.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, The Spectator, and The Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace, stand up.
You know what I'd like to talk about now? Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. It's already been a busy morning here. There's plenty of headlines coming out of this interview that Joe Biden did with Scott Pelley from 60 Minutes, including the fact that he says the U.S. will defend Taiwan if there's a Chinese invasion. He made some comments about inflation. It's not, according to Joe, nothing to worry about. Not that big of a deal. He's not sweating it, that's for sure. But one comment that I think we could really open up to the callers here is how Joe Biden feels about the pandemic. And I just want to play the game that I play. Now it's once an episode, once a day, but I don't even really care because it has to be played. We all have, it's not like Trump was president 40 years ago. You know, it's all pretty fresh in our minds. Imagine if Trump had gone on CBS and said the pandemic is over. I mean, the meltdowns that we would be seeing from the Dr. Fauci's, the Rochelle Walensky's, the Brian Stelter's, if he was still on TV, the meltdowns would be catastrophic. People would be setting their hair on fire over this. It would be a very big deal because it's jeopardizing this entire cottage industry that has come after COVID-19. And he says it, and I have heard that people, you know, are not thrilled with what he said, but he's not getting nearly the same kind of backlash. Even in the narrative that's being put out there, it's a lot of headlines like this. Joe Biden says the pandemic is over. Here's what the numbers say. Very leveled, fair headlines. If this were Trump, Donald Trump said the pandemic is over. How much blood does he have on his hands?
He was labeled a mass murderer because he said one day it will be over.
Yeah.
Like that was.
And now we're being
the
told.
End of times.
But also, let's play the cut here because there's a lot of things that don't make sense about this to me. And I want to talk about the parts of COVID that we're still seeing. And I want to throw that out to the callers. Do you feel like the pandemic is over? And I know what a lot of people will say. They'll say, listen, I stopped following the science, quote unquote, a very long time ago. And I understand that. But what I'm trying to say is, do you see any remnants of this pandemic in your day-to-day life? Whether it be when you go into a certain spot, you have to wear a mask, or maybe your kid's going back to school and there's a real push for your child to be vaccinated. In your life, is the pandemic over? Because if this is what Joe Biden is saying, then all of these mitigation efforts all have to stop. There's no excuse for it anymore. And they haven't stopped. There's a lot of places where they're still hell-bent on bringing masks back. The number is 844-500-4242. This is Joe Biden on 60 Minutes. Cut six.
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape.
Nobody's wearing masks. Well, I would argue that there's still a lot of people that are wearing masks. When I watch the White House press briefings, there's still plenty of woke reporters who are wearing masks.
All those kids in the Head Start programs that were federally mandated to wear masks last week.
Some schools still want the kids to wear masks, and they're getting pushback from parents. L.A. County wanted people to mask up just a few weeks ago. And, you know, luckily, a lot of those store owners said, hell no, we're not doing this. But I find it amazing that Joe can confidently claim that the pandemic is over. And that there's not more backlash. There's not more uproar over that kind of comment. It's pretty amazing. And as we see these headlines come out about COVID, it's not stopping. I mean, I still see, I saw the other day, and I read it here on the air, in Massachusetts, they were giving out $75 gift cards for COVID boosters. That conversation hasn't ended. You think you've seen the last of Dr. Fauci on TV? He might be retiring before the midterms, but you have not seen the last of him. You have not heard the last of Fauci talking about certain strains.
The Fauci ouchie.
So yeah, I don't take Joe Biden at his word when he says the pandemic is over. Another thing I wanted to talk about right now is this piece by Mark Hemingway in The Federalist. And he's talking about what happened in Martha's Vineyard. If you're just tuning into this, let me give you a recap. Previously on the United States of America, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, sent 50 migrants on two planes, to Martha's Vineyard. And if you're not familiar with Martha's Vineyard, you're not a beautiful person, because it is quite the island. It hosts guests like Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, Spike Lee, Meg Ryan. A lot of celebrities own homes there. John Kerry has a house there. He used to have a house on Nantucket, but then he decided, I don't know if people would consider going from Nantucket to Martha's Vineyard a downgrade or an upgrade.
Nantucket is Martha's Vineyard, Sam's the Whimsy.
Yeah, I think it's a downgrade. I think in John Kerry's mind, it's like, okay, you know, I'm not gonna try to put up a fight here, but people on Nantucket are even more snobby than people on Martha's Vineyard, in my experience. So he sends 50 people to Martha's Vineyard, 50 illegal aliens. They arrive there, and within 40 hours, they're sent back. Now, what Mark Hemingway did was he dug into some of these organizations that are now getting Profiles in Courage awards and beautiful write-ups from CNN, from all of these kind of publications, publications.
They let these migrants look at the candles in the window of their shop. What more do you want from these people?
Yeah, they did everything they could. They left it all out there.
Can't get blood from a stone.
We left it all out there. There was nothing more we could have done. Actually, before I read Mark's piece, I should read you some of the quotes from the people on Martha's Vineyard. You know, no one's giving them more credit than they're giving themselves. Here's one lady who says, I want them to have a good life. I want the journey they experienced and the hardships they experienced to have been worth it for them and their families. I want them to come to America and be embraced. Then embrace
them. Am I a hero? I really can't say, but yes.
Then embrace them for longer than 40 hours. Be the change you wish to see in the world. Isn't that the expression? And I just want their journey to have a happy ending. Well, you guys should have thought about that before you brought the buses in. Another person, Sean O'Sullivan, he wrote, the year-round community is very strong because you're kind of isolated here. Whether it's the ferry or the bad weather, you're stuck here. We're used to helping each other. We're used to dealing with people in need, and we're super happy. Like, they enriched us. We're happy to help them on their journey. But here's the problem. And I know my listeners know this, but I don't think the people in Martha's Vineyard understand. The problem is that it's what you just said, sir, that you're more than willing to help them on their journey as long as their journey doesn't end where you are, as long as it's transitory, as long as their journey, they're just passing through. And I can't remember where I read it over this weekend. I wonder if it was this Mark Hemingway piece where he said that these same people would be totally fine with thousands of migrants staying under a bridge in Texas. It just can't be on Martha's Vineyard. You know, we support illegal aliens coming here and the Statue of Liberty embracing them with her open arms, but it cannot be in Edgartown. It cannot be in Chilmark. It cannot be in West Tisbury. We have to draw a line somewhere. All right, so I think I'm going to skip around just a little bit here and say and read you this bit from Mark Hemingway. He says, in my wildest dreams, I could not have made up CNN's headline that this was the unintentionally unflattering. And it's the headline I just read you where it says they enriched us. Migrants' 44-hour visit leaves indelible mark on Martha's Vineyard. I mean, that does sound like the Babylon Bee wrote it. Or take this gauzy Washington Post profile of a Bolivian immigrant turned Martha's Vineyard real estate agent. The woman took a day off or so to help the migrants and gather supplies for them, which is, I confess, admirable behavior. But it's a drop in the bucket compared to the ongoing volunteer work being done in border towns such as El Paso and Del Rio and Yuma, which likely see 50 or more new migrants every hour. Is anyone applauding those people? Are we told that those people are very compassionate, that they care, that they're charitable, that they're doing the Lord's work, or is it only the people on Martha's Vineyard? This drives me nuts. Because every time the Martha's Vineyard beautiful people make a comment like, oh, they had us pegged wrong. Did they, though? Did we really have you pegged wrong? You were willing to put on a show for 44 hours and then send people back? Feels like I pegged you right. And yet those volunteers get little flattering national press coverage, let alone something as tone deaf as this. He goes on to quote some of the quotes that I just read to you. Martha's Vineyard is so broke, it started a GoFundMe to help with the 44-hour ordeal. Yes, the town actually issued a statement calling it a humanitarian crisis. Remember, everyone, this is me talking now. We weren't allowed to call it a crisis for months when Jen Psaki was in charge of the press briefing. She didn't want to call it a crisis. AP told its reporters, don't call it a crisis. The GoFundMe, which has since closed, was organized by Sarah Goulette on behalf of the Martha's Vineyard Community Foundation. Sarah Goulette is a New York communications executive whose clientele seems to consist largely of art galleries, and her husband is a journalist at GQ magazine. As for the Martha's Vineyard Community Foundation, it's already sitting on a slush fund of, Jared, go ahead, take a guess. Take a guess how much the Martha's Vineyard Community Foundation has in its bank account.
I'm going to do my inner Joe Biden. 100 trillion, billion, million, billion, 0.5 billion.
Well, no, compared to Joe Biden spending, this is pennies on the dollar. But $16 million.
That seems like a lot of money.
Now, I'm sure you're wondering, well, why couldn't they use that money? Well, that money is being used for efforts addressing the effects of climate change on the island, eradicating racism, removing the barriers that prevent equal rights for all, and ultimately eliminating inequality and injustice. How many community organizations do you think, and if you look at places like El Paso, if you look at one of the places that Mark mentions in the beginning of this is Lexington, Nebraska, that he was at a meeting in 2014 where the town was voicing their concerns about illegal alien children, the children of illegal aliens being dropped off in their school systems and how they were going to handle it.
That's right. That's back when Obama was human trafficking, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Do you think that there's a lot of organizations in Lexington, Nebraska that have $16 million in a slush fund? I don't think so. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls on this. And I want to tell you about a wonderful place. Jared's going to help me out here because a lot of people think of Cape Cod as a place to be during the summer. But fall and winter are super special too, especially at the Nassau Beach Inn. There's something truly magical and peaceful about staying oceanside during the off season. Now, Jared stayed there. He had the best experience. Before he tells you about it, though, I want to give you an update on the winter rates. From November through March 31st, they started just $119.99 on weekdays and $149.99 on weekends. It's overlooking Nassau Beach. The Nassau Beach Inn is the only lodging available inside the Cape Cod National Seashore. Jared, tell everyone about your stay.
It was the most tranquil place that I've ever been. Every room at the Nassau Beach Inn is right on the beach. I mean, we're talking 45 seconds. Your feet are in the water. They have fire pits, so even in the winter when the Cape is really beautiful, you sit outside, it's a little chilly or it's even cold, you just turn on the fireplace, you can sit, you can watch the sunrise, have some coffee, you can watch the moon rise, you can see the stars at night. It's fantastic. It's pet friendly. I went there in December and they have Christmas trees out, so you get a real festive feel for you. If you want to go someplace that's tranquil and wonderful, the Nassau Beach Inn is the place to go.
And reservations fill up quickly, so book early at NassauBeachInn.com. Again, it's $119.99 a night on weekdays, $149.99 a night on weekends. And those are the rates from November through March 31st. Go to NassauBeachInn.com. We'll be right back with your calls. This is the Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
I noticed that there doesn't seem to be a lot of cuts about illegal immigration, Jared. Which I'm surprised by, because I thought Biden would use the opportunity to condemn Governor Ron DeSantis and Governor Greg Abbott and tell them to get out of the way, because according to Joe Biden, there's a process in place. The process that is in place is so inhumane and so insane that we've had 2 million encounters at the border in this past fiscal year. So yeah, that the process is questionable.
Strangely, that didn't come up in the interview at all.
They were too busy talking about Joe Biden's mental fitness and how he's been in politics for a very long time. In case you thought he was a newcomer, in case you thought he just showed up. Charlie, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Charlie.
Hey, Grace. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Checking in from the island of Nantucket today. Outside, working my tail off, sweating my tail off, digging dirt and laying steel, much like a lot of my friends who work hard on this island. And I know they do on Martha's Vineyard as well. So you guys keep jumping on this beautiful people bandwagon. And those aren't the people that live here, Grace. Those are the people that are homeowners. And they come and they go, but they have no part of the infrastructure of the islands. The people that live on these islands work hard, and they're not the beautiful people, Grace. So, you know, you got to jump on that ship a little bit. Look in the mirror yourself. I mean, you worked on the island. You know, you got married down the Cape. You like your Cape Cod. You like all this stuff, too. So don't keep
folks
that live on these islands.
But, Charlie, do you understand why people feel like it's a little bit of justice that for a lot of people who vote from Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket, who preach about, you know, being sanctuaries and welcoming all people, that they only kept the illegal aliens on their island for 44 hours?
You asked me if I understand. I'm twice your age. I do understand. I understand quite a bit in this country. I've seen it all unfold in front of me. So, yeah, I get it. People don't like it. But there are a lot of hardworking people on these islands, Grace.
Yeah, I never said there wasn't hardworking people. In fact, I've actually made mention of the fact that I lived in Martha's Vineyard for a few summers and I loved the people there and I worked with a lot of hardworking people. But I can't help but feel like this is something that needed to happen for people to understand that there's consequences to open borders, and those consequences shouldn't just fall on people who happen to live in Texas, Charlie. That's not fair either.
I'm not talking about the open borders. I'm talking about how you're treating the people of the islands. I understand the border problems. I'm on your side, 100%. But the way you're treating these people on these islands is an unfair characterization of these people. So I'm asking you to take a little look at what you guys are talking about and think about how you refer to these people that are keeping these islands open for the visitors and for yourselves and for everybody that comes to visit these places. And yeah, we're doing services for some of these people you're talking about, but again, these aren't the people that live on these islands.
Well, I don't think I've been unfair. And you know, a lot of times I get criticism on this show and I'll hear it out and I hear what you're saying, but I really don't think I've been unfair. Am I giving them the CNN coverage of saying that they're doing a wonderful thing? There's plenty of coverage, Charlie, that is giving the people of Martha's Vineyard a nice round of applause. And I don't think that's deserved.
How many times do you think you've said beautiful people today, Grace? I mean, you just keep talking about these beautiful people. That's not the way it is. It's just not the way it is. You know, I'm here to work hard. I'm here to make everything nice like everybody else is. But I'm not running around flaunting anything, showing anybody anything. I mean, it's just an unfair characterization, and I kind of resent that you and Howie keep dumping on us. And, you know, like, I like you guys. You know, you're my fans. I'm outside working and listening to you. And if I didn't like you, I wouldn't be listening. But give us a break, please.
Okay. I get what you're saying, Charlie. I don't think I've been unduly harsh. I really don't. I think I've actually been pretty fair. But if that's how you feel, then that's how you feel. I'm not going to change your mind. It's like kind of two separate issues. You don't like the way I'm characterizing people in Martha's Vineyard. And of course, I'm playing up what a lot of us see in Martha's Vineyard, which is there's a lot of wealth there. There's a lot of liberal people there who vote a certain way. And I don't think anyone's really going to deny that. But of course, there's always exceptions to that rule. There's people there who work hard, who are not part of the elite. But I am not going to give them the kind of treatment that CNN is giving the people of Martha's Vineyard, which is to say that they deserve some sort of pat on the back for taking in illegal aliens for 44 hours and then acting like they did some great service for everyone.
Yeah, this is specifically about these beautiful people who invade the island from elsewhere and live there a short amount of time, like Charlie was talking about.
I think most people understand that I'm not talking about people like Charlie. I think that's kind of a given.
Yeah.
844-500-4242. And also, let's talk about how do you think people in Texas feel? The way they've been characterized as being non-compassionate bigots for wanting there to be some law and order. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
To be fair to that last caller, I haven't just said the words beautiful people. I also wrote it a lot over the weekend. I've got two columns, one in Spectator and one on the Boston Herald that you can check out. On a serious note, though, I appreciate Charlie's opinion. I appreciate him listening. I love the fact that you all tune in, even when you do disagree with me or I drive you crazy. But one thing I'd add in here is I think it kind of goes without saying. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe I need to be this specific. But I think it kind of goes without saying that I'm not talking about regular people who have common sense who don't vote for these kind of policies on Martha's Vineyard. I thought that was pretty much a given. But yeah, that I'll just say that right there. I'm not talking about you. If you're someone who's normal and you understand the hypocrisy of the left, then I'm not talking about you. If you're someone who has a hate has no home here sign on your front lawn, and then you go apoplectic when 50 illegal aliens show up at your front door, that's who I'm really referring to here. Pamela, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Pamela.
Hi, good afternoon, Grace. How are you?
Go,
I have
what's
a
going
question
on?
I have not been able to receive an answer to as of yet. I have emailed our Massachusetts governor, some of our state reps, a few others, and I'm getting absolutely no response. I live on Cape Cod and in Massachusetts. If we have a state that is deemed a sanctuary state, exactly how many illegal immigrants is that state required to take? Is there a limit? Or is it just take on as many want to come? Seriously, is there a cap? I'm asking because the majority of us already feel like we are struggling here and now, especially in this area. So I'm looking for an exact number. Because I'm sure there was some funding, federal funding, that was given to these sanctuary states. How can they give federal funding if they don't have a number that they're giving the funding to?
Well, yeah, and this is a theme you see a lot from liberals where, for example, they want to cancel student loan debt, but they don't know how much they are going to have to cancel, and they don't know who's going to pay for it or where the money's going to come from. I mean, there's not a lot of thinking beyond the first step, thinking beyond the headline or the thing that you can virtue signal about. And it's a really good point, Pamela, but also something I'd add in is that the concept of sanctuary cities in and of itself is an incentive for more people to cross the border. If they think there are cities like New York City, like Chicago, like DC, that have this as a policy, then of course they're going to want to come here. And Eric Adams disagrees with me. I actually want to play this cut here. This is New York City Mayor Eric Adams talking about sanctuary cities. His sanctuary city now, according to Eric, is at a tipping point because of this horrific busing of migrants from Texas to New York. And this is what he has to say. Cut 30.
You pledged during your campaign to keep New York City a sanctuary, a city. Do you have any concern that policy is attracting more people to the border, more people to cross the border to make that dangerous trip?
No, not at all. This city has always been a sanctuary city, and we've always managed those who wanted to come to New York City to pursue the American dream.
Yeah, but now that people who want to come to New York City have the way to get there, which is a bus from Texas, thanks to Greg Abbott, you don't seem to want to be a sanctuary city. That's just a little something I'm noticing. Thank you for the call, Pamela. It's a good question. Don't wait for an answer, because I don't think you're going to get
one.
Did
this just happen?
Kimberly, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Kimberly.
Hi, Grace. I just sold my house in Sudbury, Mass. In 2018 because I couldn't afford the property taxes anymore. They're a little bit over $18 per thousand. And I just looked up Edgartown's property taxes, and they're only just a tad over $3 per thousand. I think there's a huge disparity in Massachusetts between the burden that they're placed, and it's wonderful to be an island, you know, and not have to educate kids and to send your migrants elsewhere.
Yeah,
and that's all I wanted to say.
Kimberly, I'm glad you said that because I want to read you a little bit more here from Mark Hemingway's piece. I put it in my reading for the day, but he really did a great job of figuring out how the dynamics are working in Martha's Vineyard versus the rest of the country. He said, when 50 migrants show up in Martha's Vineyard, there's a housing crisis, so they must be sent elsewhere. When 10,000 Haitian migrants cross the border with nowhere to go, it's fine if they have to sleep under a bridge indefinitely, so long as that is the problem of Del Rio, Texas. Now, people forget about that because that was like inflation. We were told that Haitian migrants were not coming to America to stay here, that this was a stop on their journey. And then the real story, the only time, you know, Kamala Harris or Joe Biden cared about the 10,000 Haitian migrants who were living under bridges in Texas was when they thought they could vilify the Border Patrol agents for whipping said migrants.
Cool whip.
Which was false. Fact check, false. I don't need the fact checkers of America to tell me that one was a big fat lie. But that was the only time Kamala Harris ran towards a camera to talk about illegal immigration. The border czar has no interest in it unless she thinks she can make the heroic men and women who work on our border look like evil people. Then she's all about talking about it. And as soon as that story went away, guess what else went away? Kamala Harris went away. Joe Biden went away. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Sending migrants, again, this is Mark Hemingway, sending migrants to Martha's Vineyard may have been a distasteful stunt, but the point was very effectively made. And the attempts to spin what happened aren't hiding the truth. When it comes to immigration, there is no upper bound to the burdens and suffering progressive elites will demand of others. There is definitely an upper bound to the burden they're willing to endure themselves. And in their own rich enclaves, it is appallingly low. I think that's hard to escape from in this whole story. I think that Americans see this double standard. And I do think it's going to affect them in the midterms. Because as I pointed out in my piece in Spectator, it's not just that Republicans are finally figuring out how to play the optics game. Face it, politics, a lot of it is grandstanding. A lot of it is theatrics. And Republicans, for the first time, I think in my lifetime, have figured out how to play the game a little bit. And they're actually acting more like Democrats right now. And it just so happens to coincide with the exact same moment that Joe Biden is setting the Democrat playbook of knowing how to, you know, handle a PR problem on fire. The same time Ron DeSantis is doing this, Joe Biden's in a tuxedo singing happy birthday to a woman at a gala and lecturing about how there's a process in place. Or he's on 60 Minutes with Scott Pelley telling us that inflation's no big deal. Or what did he say? It's flat. And that the pandemic is over. And all these other things. And so it's an amazing thing to watch both of these happening at the same time. Like James Taylor's on the South Lawn, strumming his guitar at the Inflation Reduction Party. While Republicans are finally getting some cojones and doing something that is really hard for the media to spin. But they're trying. They're saying that, you know, Ron DeSantis should be sued, that this is kidnapping and human trafficking. And no one on any of these panels, you know, Eli Mistal and all these people on MSNBC, not one person on the panel has the common sense to say, well, why wasn't it all of these things when Biden was doing it a few weeks ago? Nobody says that. There's no pushback whatsoever. It's really amazing. And MSNBC at the same time wonders why their ratings are in the toilet. There's a piece today in the Wall Street Journal, The Real Midterm Election Stakes, and I think that it's important to remember what we're dealing with heading into these midterms. It's very easy to get distracted from all the side stories, and there are a lot this year. I mean, you've got John Fetterman refusing to debate Dr. Oz. You got Katie Hobbs refusing to debate Carrie Lake. There's plenty of stories out there. But the real issue, according to the Wall Street Journal, by far the most important for actual policy is whether voters will put a legislative check on the political left. Now, what I like about this article is that it draws in the fact that in 2020, Joe Biden set it up so that he was running against Trump and he was running against Trump's COVID policies. And now what they're trying to do in 2024 and in 2022 is they're trying to have Biden and his team of Democrats running again against Trump and also against the Republicans' stance on abortion. And the big question becomes, will it work? Will the voters go for it? But what this piece lays out is if it does work, if Joe Biden is successful in setting up this narrative that a vote for Republicans is a vote to ban abortion across this country, and it's a vote for Donald Trump, and it's a vote for insurrection, if he can do that again, and by some scary scenario, Democrats add to their majority in the Senate and keep the House. I know, it's just, even saying it out loud scares me. But what do they plan on doing? What comes next? Because if you're sitting around, or if you have friends who are sitting around and thinking, well, it's probably just going to be more of the same. No. You give them one more chance here, they're going to ramp it up.
Yeah, and this election, this next election, if they win, might be the last election. I don't want to be hyperbolic, but they're going to try and redo, they're going to get rid of the Electoral College. They're going to try and pack the court.
This is exactly what this piece says.
Yeah.
It goes through all of it. It says they're going to target the filibuster. They're also going to try to add D.C. as a new state. They're going to pass, the Democrats have already passed H.R. 4 that would require the Justice Department or D.C. District Court to approve election laws changes in states. Democrats also want to pass a carbon emissions enforcement mechanism that failed this year because it violated Senate budget reconciliation rules. Build back better entitlements, including all of that human infrastructure, like universal pre-K, all that child tax credit, paid family leave, that will reemerge from the grave. Major tax increases will also be back in play. Ways and Means Chairman Richard Neal recently told a Bloomberg reporter that Democrats will raise individual and corporate tax rates if they keep power. And then at the end, in this piece in the Wall Street Journal, it says there's much more we could include here, but you get the idea. There won't be much of a check on progressive ambitions. If they accomplish this with inflation at 8%, they will be even more emboldened. That is what's really on the ballot in November. And they know that. They're going to ramp it up. 844-500-4242. We've got a lot more to talk about here before we go. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Democrat surveillance state is here. There are 87,000, or there will be, new armed non-law enforcement IRS agents. So why does America need that? The liar said no new taxes on individuals making under $400,000. So we paid attention to the 400K, and they slipped this in under our noses. They'll soon control all aspects of your life with armed agents rummaging through every dime you've spent. This is no joke. So what do you want to do? Well, you have to protect your nest egg. Now is the time. You traded thousands of hours of time building your nest egg, so make sure that you protect it. You need this now. It's Monetary Gold's new guide, 5 money mistakes that could crush your retirement in the next 6 months. Call Monetary Gold now. There's no time to delay. It's 888-617-7994. Get 5 money mistakes that could crush your retirement in the next 6 months. 888-617-7994. Time is of the essence. We've talked about a lot of different things in this hour. We talked about Joe Biden claiming the pandemic is over. We've talked about what's happening at the border and what's happening on Martha's Vineyard. And also what is going to be happening leading up to these midterms. Joining us now is our next caller, Bob. You're next on The Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I went to the dentist today, and I said to the receptionist, I said, when is this mask mandate going to be over? And she told me that she had called last week to the National Dental whatever organization it was, is it's indefinite. So this COVID thing is not over.
Yeah, so I guess the National Dental Association, or whatever it's called, is not taking its cues from Joe Biden, or is not watching Scott Pelley's program on CBS. Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of parts of this pandemic that are going to be around forever, including the government agencies that have made big bucks and made big business out of this pandemic. And listen, no one is trying to say, I always make this clarification, we lost a lot of people during this pandemic, and it was tragic that that happened. But a lot of these mitigation efforts were proven to be fruitless. And that includes plexiglass, which we found out didn't do anything. That includes contact tracing, which was the biggest boondoggle of all, and all these booster shots. I mean, two things can exist at the same time. You can feel very sad for people who lost someone in the pandemic, or who lost memories during the pandemic, or who couldn't, you know, bury loved ones, or have weddings, or have graduations, or whatever it is. And at the same time, you can be critical of all of the pork that is now being spent on something, and the pork is not doing anything to fix these problems. I think both of those things can exist. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Don't be fooled by imposters with similar names. If you're unhappy with your smile, you need to visit Dr. Bruce Houghton in Nashua. Call 1-844-A-PERFECT-SMILE or visit perfectsmiles.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Did you voluntarily watch Joe Biden's 60 Minutes interview?
No. I watched a lot of football yesterday. I'm not going to pretend I was paying attention. It was on the TV, and I was in the area while it was playing. But no, I had really no interest in watching that live. And to be fair, I knew that I'd watch a lot of it today. I don't think, though, if my job wasn't in politics, I still don't think I would have watched it.
98% of the audience says no, they did not voluntarily watch it.
And part of the problem with these programs is they're so predictable. You know they're not going to go hard at Joe Biden. You know they're not going to ask him the questions that we all want them to ask him. That's never going to happen. So you already know the formula, and that kind of creates a big problem for them when they're trying to get ratings. People don't like to watch things. I actually read a piece the other day about why these woke movies and stuff fail, and that was, this writer was drawing in the point, I wish I had it in front of me, that it's the predictability factor. People know that in these woke movies, certain things have to happen. The woman has to, you know, prevail over the man, and this and X, Y, Z, and all these boxes have to be checked in order for the movie to have that woke, feel-good, virtue-signaling feeling. And therefore, the movies are oftentimes just boring because you're not supposed to know what's going to happen in a movie. It's supposed to be kind of exciting, and they all kind of follow the same thing every time. Walter, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Walter.
Yeah, the point I wanted to make is the Democrats using abortion as an issue in this campaign is an absolute red herring. 99% of voters are never going to have to consider whether or not to have an abortion. But 100% of the voters are going to have to consider whether or not to buy groceries. Inflation is a hell of a lot more important to consider your vote than abortion ever will be.
Yeah, and abortion laws could change in many states, and the Wall Street Journal wrote this as well, depending on election results, but probably not in most. And I'm going to read you this from the Wall Street Journal. In other words, the Democratic election strategy is a new version of their 2020 campaign bait and switch. Joe Biden and Democrats in Congress won by making the election a referendum on Mr. Trump and COVID-19. But once in office, they pivoted and advanced a far-left labor agenda, and they enacted the biggest expansion of government in modern history. They succeeded on many fronts and only didn't because of Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema and a few other ones. So they're admitting the media are ignoring this as they echo the abortion and Trump narrative. And Walter's right. I think a lot of people would put inflation higher on their list of priorities. And in fact, I think a lot of people who abortion's their number one priority were never voting for Republicans to begin with, if I had to make a guess. We're going to be back with Ari Hoffman, and later, Trudeau takes the mic. Don't go anywhere.